but for purposes of identification it is possible to impress the medium's brain so that he believes that he sees, and in order to make the identification complete, this impression is almost invariably of the spirit as it appeared while still dressed in mortality, the impression corresponding with the memory of friends. It is not a delusion, it is not even a deception. But those who are content to stop at this phase of spirit manifestation, and seek nothing further, know nothing whatever of spiritualism. They accept the guarantee for the thing itself, that which is offered in testimony of truth for the truth. But why was that deception about Jesus permitted? Truly that was a deception, but when you visited the lower spheres, was it not explained to you that spirits of a low grade, who have no clear perceptions of right and wrong, take pleasure in deluding humanity? It affords them rare amusement. The ignorant and credulous offer themselves as willing victims to this class of spirits. But how can humanity protect itself from the impositions of this class? The way is very plain. Let mediums themselves in their personal characters rise above them, and they cannot approach them for purposes of evil, and on the other hand, let mankind at large bring to the study of these phenomena its reason and its judgment. Let it not take all spiritual utterances on faith, simply because they are spiritual in their source. Let it discriminate between the good and the evil, the wise and the foolish, that which if accepted will benefit, and that which will prove injurious. But to return to the subject of mediums, study this clairvoyant, and see what she is. I did so, and her character was revealed to me, showing me that she was not only ignorant and credulous, but with no clear convictions of duty, no just conceptions of the importance of her mission as a medium of communication between the two worlds. The display of clairvoyant powers concluded, one spirit after another took possession of her organism for a brief time. 90 The communications of those who wished to speak to Earth friends were for the most part brief and unsatisfactory, though several names were correctly given. Why was this? In answer, the power was given to me to perceive in part the method of communication. The impression was made upon, and the work performed through, the brain of the medium, and this being dull and untrained, responded but faintly to the touch of spirit hands. One of the higher band of spirits found opportunity to attempt communication through her, but what a look of dismay and discouragement came over him, when he heard his brilliant thoughts dulled, the truths he would utter obscured, his meaning perverted, and his very language murdered, in passing through the channel of this woman's intellect. Disappointed, he soon ceased his efforts, and again a degraded spirit stepped in, and with scarcely a break in the discourse, proceeded at some length with a jargon of ideas, and a grammar eliminated of all recognized rules, and when he concluded, he announced the name of one of the most brilliant statesmen America has ever known. This name was received with a rapture of delight by a large number of those present, while the boon companions of the mischievous invisible were equally expressive of their pleasure. Oh, it was rare fun for them. Then a second medium was controlled by one or more spirits. I could look into his heart and see good impulses there, but also impurity and lack of high principle. He, too, though not so much the plaything and jest of mischievous immortals, drew around him only a lower class of spirits, and nothing of any real spiritual value was received through his mediumship, and as I studied him, I saw that it was impossible that there ever would be, until he was radically changed. This instrument, like the other, gave forth only weak and discordant notes, even when played upon by master spirits, because it was imperfect and out of tune. A third medium opened her lips in her turn, and I waited anxiously to see and hear what would be the message, and how delivered. Again I was given that inner perception of character. 91 I saw a woman of weakly good impulses, superstitious in her nature, and with a zeal for her faith which was only excelled by her ignorance. Only partially controlled by unseen powers, she allowed her eagerness and imagination to run away with her. She mistook her own impulses for genuine impressions from the spirit world, and that which she gave was a medley of truth and falsehood, reality and delusion, the whole so debased by ignorance and misconception as to be utterly worthless, yet the woman did not intentionally deceive. She was a victim of her own zeal and her own mental delusions, while other victims, enshrouded in the same mental and spiritual darkness as herself, listened intently and even reverently to what she said, and accepted her words without question. "You see," said Margaret, "what we have to contend with in our attempts to establish communication between the material and spiritual worlds. Not only must man look through a glass darkly in his attempts to behold the light, but the glass is too often unnecessarily obscured by ignorance, folly and evil. We need patience." Almost disheartened, I then turned my attention to the fourth and last medium, to see if any hope were left for the communication of truth from the spirit world. As I studied her from my vantage ground of the spirit world, from which we can look through the disguises of the flesh, I found that she was a woman of quick perceptions, keen discernment, true to the heart's core, and fully appreciating the privileges and duties which fell to her because of her peculiar gift. I had known all these four mediums while I was still in the flesh, and had gained a tolerably accurate estimate of their different characters, but had never realized as now, the important bearings these characters and acquirements had upon their mediumship. As I still regarded the fourth speaker, I noted that she was surrounded only by bright spirits. As others approached her, they seemed restrained at a certain distance by some invisible barrier which, try as they would, they could not pass. She was herself true, and therefore as a medium she uttered words of truth. 92. She was intelligent, and did not unwittingly pervert the truth. All her desires and aspirations seemed to be directed heavenward, and the cry of her soul seemed to be, "Oh, make me worthy, make me more worthy of the mission to which I am appointed." And a bright band of angels, as if in response, encircled her head with a glowing diadem of stars, while their hands were extended above her in benediction. Even she was not perhaps fully capable of becoming the messenger of communication from the brightest and best of those who have passed to the spirit world from the earth life, but then how few there are, where can they be found, who are thus in all things capable? But still another shock was in store for me. Words were spoken in which there was much wisdom, words which were not unworthy of almost any source, but when a name illustrious in the annals of literature, whose possessor had passed to spirit life more than a generation ago, was given, I felt my heart sink within me. I knew the spirit thus named was not present. I had already sufficient knowledge to feel assured that he passed onward to a sphere whose inhabitants do not return to earth. Was there, then, no dependence to be placed in the utterances of mediums? Were even the best liable to self-deception? Margaret, ever watchful, divined my thoughts. "Look," said she, pointing upward. As I obeyed her I beheld, or seemed to behold, for if it was not sight, it was a perception as strong as the sense of seeing, a succession of links extending from sphere to sphere, and from spirit to spirit, and on this chain of links the thought has been conveyed, originating far heavenward, and descending from spirit to spirit, until it had finally found utterance on earth. Oh! These wonderful spiritual bonds which can bring earth in communication with the higher spheres, and bind all together as a perfect whole. On this occasion I realized as I had never before the difficulties which beset the spirit world in its attempts to establish communication with earth. Mortals themselves are very ignorant of the necessary conditions. 93. Then their imperfect natures draw around them more or less degraded spirits, who naturally interfere with, if they do not utterly thwart, the efforts of the higher and purer ones. Then mediumship being, as it might be said, an accident of the physical and mental organization, mediums are as a rule quite unprepared for the work required of them. Untrained, too often the reverse of spiritual in their natures, too often without a sense of moral responsibility, from such harsh, discordant instruments, though their keys be touched by angel fingers, mortals can never hope to hear the melodies of heaven. The first need of spiritualism is conscientious, pure-minded mediums, fully recognizing the grave responsibilities resting upon them, and seeking to fit themselves in every way for their work. How clearly I see now, as I did not see in earth life, that the more fully mediums cultivate themselves in every direction, intellectually as well as spiritually, Do they lessen the labor of their spirit visitants who have a work to do on earth, and can only perform it satisfactorily by the help of mortal agency? The wiser, purer and truer is the medium, not only will a higher class of spirits be attracted, but truth itself will be less adulterated in passing through his or her intelligence. As water to the spectator apparently takes on the color of the glass which contains it, so must the nature of the medium tinge and modify all that to which he or she gives utterance. At last the supreme moment had come. I was permitted to attempt the control of a human organism. That which seemed so easy, I found very difficult, but I was kindly instructed and assisted until I finally succeeded in uttering a few words, and in partially establishing my identity. From one point my effort was very unsatisfactory, and not at all what I had pictured to myself while in earth life that it should be. Then I had resolved that I would make no blunders, utter no foolishness, and that my tests should be perfect, but I fell far short of my earth-born intentions. Perhaps I may reach them in the future. I shall try. 94 There was, however, supreme satisfaction in having been allowed to make the effort, and in finding that I was even partially successful. To succeed at all now, meant greater success at some future period. There was one incident which I came very near forgetting to relate. Among the many spirits of nearly all grades which thronged to the spirit side of this earthly stance, after a time there entered one who seemed unlike all the rest. Though he bore the outward form of manhood, he seemed almost to belong to a lower order of beings. Upon his face was a vacant expression, as if intelligence were nearly lacking, and in its stead was almost the look of a wild beast. He seemed scarcely to see or hear what was going on around him. Indeed, he must have been blind and deaf to most of the spiritual happenings, but crouching down in an abject attitude, he remained silent and motionless. Was he conscious of what was passing? If he was, for some time he gave no sign, and I presently became satisfied that the direct spirit utterances fell on deaf ears. But after a while a dull curiosity seemed to be awakened in what the mediums were saying. It was evident that he heard them, and perhaps indistinctly saw them. Neither the reprehensible deceits of the lying spirits, nor the discouraging failures of the true ones, seemed to make more than a surface impression upon him. But finally, when through the agency of the only worthy medium present, beautiful truths were being uttered, his face took on a new expression. I was impressed to watch him intently. He looked perplexed, as if some faint, far-off memory was struggling to the surface. The words had recalled something which he had so long forgotten that it had almost become to him as though it had never happened. The struggle went on, and at last memory was triumphant. An expression of intense pain swept over his face, and this was followed by fearful passion. What was it? I could not tell. Was it a far-off innocent childhood and of a time before he had all but murdered his own soul, and thus sent it to a long sleep? No, I could not tell. But, snapping and snarling like a wild animal, and uttering broken sentences as of half-forgotten but terrible oaths, the man crept away with hideously contorted motions, not even seeking to rise to his feet, but using all fours. The spectacle was a horrible one. You have beheld the first awakening of a soul from its death-like lethargy, said Margaret, who, too, had witnessed the scene. It can never sleep again, but through agonies untold must begin to work out its own redemption. He will be attracted hither again and again, each time to retreat in the same fury of debasing passion, until after many times he will become calmer, and will stay and listen, and will hear a few words, perhaps, which shall shed a little spiritual light upon him, and from merely feeling he will begin to think. He has a long and weary way before him, for he is just setting out upon the road, but though he knows it not, his face is turned toward the light only, it does not reach him yet. Poor, lost human soul. Oh! The outer darkness where it has so long dwelt. Oh! The weeping, wailing and gnashing of teeth which must be its portion before it finds itself in the light of divine truth and warmed by divine love. 96. He will become calmer, and will stay and listen. Chapter 10. The field is the world. At last I have found my work. It was not appointed for me arbitrarily, as is so often done on earth. I did not even choose it, but I recognized it as my work, because, in spite of many misgivings, I have found myself specially suited to it, and as I begin to realize the scope of this work, how many things this realization makes plain which were obscured before. How it untangles the threads of life, and shows a purpose and plan where all heretofore has seemed purposeless. It is not my mission to be a ministering angel to the lost and wandering spirits in the lower and darker spheres. I am not yet pure enough and wise enough for that. But I have borne the burdens of humanity. I know what it suffers, and how it is tried and tempted. I know its battles with self. I have charity for its failures because I have myself failed so many times, and, thank the overruling love and goodness, I know something of its victories. I realize my kinship to this humanity, and with it lies my work. Yes, though my home is no longer there, but is eternal in the heavens, my labor is still upon earth. There I shall be permitted yet to do the many things which, through weariness or possibly disinclination, I left undone during my mortal existence. How grateful I am for this! To everyone is not given the blessed opportunity of setting right the wrongs for which he is responsible, repairing the failures and atoning for the errors of his past, as it is given to me. 97. I may not live my own life over again, but by the experiences of that life, gained through weariness, pain and bitter anguish, I may help and bless other lives, lighten others' burdens, whisper words of wisdom into listening ears, and lay my hands in benediction upon those bowed down with trouble or affliction. Could any work be more welcome to me? Surely not, and gladly I go back to do it. I shall speak to you, through the hands of your mediums I shall write to you, I shall be with you in your labors, and in your hours of happiness and rest I shall still stand by you trying to lift your minds from things temporal to things spiritual. When temptation conies to you, I shall not desert you, but shall bid you be strong and remain true to your better natures. But if you hear me not, and weakly yield, shall I turn away from you in contempt and scorn? No, a thousand times no. By my own sins have I learned that charity which suffered long, and in your hours of completest spiritual degradation shall I strive to come nearest you, clasping my arms about you in a loving pity, and seeking to bring you back to your better, nobler selves. Truly there is more joy in the spirit world over the one sinner that repented, than over the 99 that go not astray. I am still weak, I am still ignorant. The future holds out to me an ever-broadening vista of knowledge and experience, in contrast with which my personality seems to shrink smaller and smaller. But the years of earth life have brought me some wisdom, and that I can utilize. Though still in the ABC class of spiritual wisdom, looking backward as I now do over the past, by the means of the newly learned spirit alphabet, I'm beginning to spell out the meaning of all my earthly experiences. While I was still on earth, many of them were as if written in hieroglyphics which it was impossible for me to decipher, but with the heavenly key I am beginning to read them, and to comprehend their meaning, and, with a full remembrance of all the weariness, the bitterness and the anguish, I can say today that, even if I could, I would undo nothing in that past. 98. Each experience has its place, meaning and purpose, and I expect to see all this clearer and clearer as eternity rolls on. Oh! A wonderful and solemn thing is human life, with results which are never-ending. It is not the purpose of this letter to describe to you in what manner I have finally learned how to reach and communicate with those still in the flesh. Suffice it to say that I have done so. Neither will I weary you with personal matters by describing my ministrations to my own special loved ones, and what delight they have brought to me, what consolation to them. But though I shall never forget those whom I have left behind, and shall always be drawn to them by the ties of spiritual kinship, as ever I was by ties of the flesh, my heart is growing large enough to include all humanity in its love and compassion, and my field of labor is wherever there are human souls needing help or comfort. There are many of us to whom this work is given, and to us it seems the best and noblest work which can be done, probably because it is best suited to us. Perhaps someday when I have grown in wisdom and righteousness, and when my knowledge of the spirit life shall be perfect enough to warrant it, I shall be promoted, not only to a higher sphere, but to a higher field of labor, and shall find my work all here, bidding farewell to earth forever. Such a result does not now seem to me desirable, but when the time comes I shall desire it because I shall be prepared for it. There is one thing I wish to speak of, though it may appear somewhat out of place in this chapter, but it has not seemed to come in appropriately anywhere else. One day my boys, my own beautiful boys, said to me, "Our beautiful mother." Beautiful. How strangely the word sounded, applied to me. I had been beautiful once, but that was long ago. 90 I chid them for their loving flattery, for I still carried the picture in my mind of the grey hair, the dull eyes, and the thin, lined cheeks and brow, out of which all youth and beauty had long ago vanished, which had been the semblance of my earthly self. Lovingly they assured me they were not flattering me, and in proof they brought me a mirror, and I beheld myself once more. Myself, and yet not myself. There were the general outlines of the features, just as I had long been familiar with them, but the wrinkles of care were smoothed away, the traces of age had vanished, and more than the beauty of youth, the beauty of the spirit, illuminated them. Humbly and gratefully I recognized the fact that I was indeed beautiful, with a beauty upon which time should cast no shadow, nor sorrow mar, and to which eternity should bring still greater perfection. What more can I say to you now? Oh! There is so much still untold, that it seems useless to begin the telling. I shall speak and write to you again, I have already assured you of that. But now I bring this long letter to a close. I only purposed to tell my first experiences in spirit life, and these I have narrated here as faithfully as the conditions of spirit control will permit me. More obstacles than you can realize have stood in the way of my making myself perfectly understood. First of all, there is the difficulty of expressing ideas and describing events which have no counterpart in mortal existence. In many ways I know I have rendered myself liable to misapprehension. Thus, when I speak of different places, of going and coming, my meaning has not been the same that you would attach to those phrases. Each one here creates his own surroundings. His heaven or hell proceeds from within himself outward until it surrounds him like an actual locality. Those who dwell in darkness do so because their souls are dark and send out no rays of light. I did not visit differently located spheres, in the same sense that you would understand the term, but was permitted to view darkened spiritual states, and made to realize what was the effect upon those who existed in such conditions. 100 The senses, too, play a subordinate part here. They are as keen as in earth life, but there is a newly developed sense or spiritual perception which outranks them all, and by means of this many of our impressions are received, and much of our knowledge acquired. I cannot describe this sense to you because you would not comprehend, and can only approximate its effects. Then there have been other obstacles in the way of a complete expression of what I would wish to say. Imperfect mediumship is one of the greatest of these. In the haphazard way in which mediums are developed, there are very few indeed who are capable of becoming passive amanuenses for spirit control. The medium's thoughts and opinions, and especially modes of expression, will always creep in more or less, giving a color and character of greater or less degree to all that which purports to proceed from the spirit world. Then it has not always been possible to hold the same strength of control, and as this has weakened, expression has become more difficult. But with all these drawbacks, I have succeeded in saying substantially that which I wished to say, to describe to you the spirit world as I have found it, and to seek to impress upon your minds the fundamental religious truths of spiritualism, that as a man is on earth, the same will he find himself upon his entrance into immortal life. And reward shall be given to every man according as his works shall be. Spiritualism is the religion of personal responsibility, of never dying hope, and of eternal progress. It is the religion which meets every need and every trial of life, holding a clearly burning beacon to light the way, and as men live up to the highest knowledge of truth within their hearts, newer and greater truths shall be given them, and they shall be led by spirit hands, Spirit voices shall whisper in their ears, and their souls shall be attuned to the harmony of heaven. The knowledge of the Spirit is the fountain of living waters which flows from the great central throne whence proceed infinite wisdom and infinite love. 101 The Spirit and the Bride say, Come, and let him that heareth say, Come, and let him that is athirst come, and whosoever will, let him take the water of life freely. May the Spirit of peace find its way to all your hearts, and abide with you now and forever. Book published 1889, without the color pictures.